This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now for Zadina, back for Fabry, moving in, shooting, kicked away, rebound, they score. Bounced off a jet, it's 3-0 Detroit.
From Thursday night in Motor City, the Red Wings are off the schneid at the expense of the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets took care of business on home ice. They could not replicate that on the road. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We want to hear from you. You can reach us here in studio. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. You can also send us your text messages. Standard messaging rates do apply, but send your text to 129090. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, Saturday morning, a chilly Saturday morning out there. Drive safe. It's nice and slippery and cold, so dress warm. But gentlemen, it is good to see you nice and hot here in the TSN 1290 studios.
Yeah, good to see you guys as well. The best thing about these two Jets-Red Wing games, the home-and-home series, the best thing is that it's over.
Yeah, so we never have to see them. So you don't have to watch the Red Wings again?
Wow, are the Red Wings bad. And I still really, even after watching the replay, the highlights of the loss on Thursday night, it's hard to believe that the Jets lost to that team. And, you know, good for the Red Wings. You know, they played hard. I mean, anybody that listens to this show knows that I'm a big Robbie Fabry guy. And, you know, Robbie Fabry obviously had the two goals and he's had a really nice turnaround season with the Red Wings. But, you know, no Anthony Mantha, no double A Athanasiou.
Dylan Larkin was sick.
Dylan Larkin was sick. No, Jimmy Howard. Yeah. And yeah, Dave, you know, Jonathan Bernier played really well. And obviously, you know, when Eric Comrie was in net, they didn't get a lot of support, you know, when they played in Winnipeg. But, you know, that Red Wings team is probably the worst team that I've seen since that year that the Avalanche had 48 points.
Well, the Red Wings hope that their future eventually resembles the Colorado Avalanche, because after that terrible year, we now know where they are, and that's right up top the NHL standings. But, you know, the Jets, you know, they take care of business. It's not like they played well on Tuesday night. They played well for about, you know, 7-10 minutes, and that was enough. That's enough to beat the Red Wings. I mean, they had the flurry, you know, at the end of the second period where they got the three goals in the 2 minutes. But I thought, you know, up until that point in time, they were the better of the two teams, but they were sort of sleepwalking through the game. They opened the scoring on Tuesday night.
I don't know, but I mean, yeah, like Detroit gets out to the good start. The shots were 6-0. We all know that. But yeah, then after that, I think after the first period, the shots were like 12-6.
After that,
so it's not like the Red Wings had, you know, unbelievable, great, you know, road first period. And yes, Adam Lowry goal probably shouldn't have counted. Let's be honest. I mean, the whistle should have been blown. And, you know, after the review, I actually thought it wasn't going to count. I wasn't in the building, but I was watching at home and I was surprised that the goal counted. But, you know, it's not like the Red Wings were in control of that game or anything like that. And you're right. Yeah, you score three goals in 2 minutes or whatever it was.
Exactly 2 minutes.
But, I mean, Hellebuyck comes in for Brossoit. It's a lucky goal.
And, yeah. Look, the Jets get credit for their win on Tuesday. They were the better of the two teams, but they started off slow on Tuesday night, and if it wasn't for Lauren Brossoit playing well through the first, you know, 5 or 7 minutes of that game before Lowry is able to get the shorthanded goal, you know, the Red Wings could have easily been up a goal on Tuesday night. In any event, they weren't. Obviously, the Jets then took care of business, and it was home free, and it was an easy victory come the third period on Tuesday night. But again, on Thursday, you thought, you know, they played so, you know, they came out so flat. You thought maybe they would learn from their mistake, they being the Jets, and that they would come out with a little more emotion to start the game, playing against Detroit for the second time in a row. But they were flat again. And the Red Wings obviously took advantage and they got some very fortunate bounces. And, you know, finally the puck luck went their way. But it is a little concerning to me that the second half of that home and home, the Jets came out just as flat as they did the first game against the Red Wings on Tuesday night, Dave.
Well, you know, we talk about it in the AHL, how difficult it is to sweep a team when you play these series, whether it's two at home or two on the road or a home and home like this, because the team can game plan for you. And perhaps, you know, knowing that the Jets were going to have, you know, had a slow start on the Tuesday, the Red Wings took advantage. But of course, I mean, that was such an unusual game, right? Nathan Beaulieu can't keep a puck in, hits the linesman, sets up that Darren Helm opportunity, right, yeah. And then Neil Pionk scores two against the Jets. I mean, the bounces were just bizarre, And you know what? And the truth is, you make it a 3-2 game, and you think to yourself, okay, the Jets, even when the Jets don't necessarily deserve it, they're in the game, and they've got a good chance. And then, of course, you know, that late penalty, and then the puck goes in off Sabiza and past Hellebuck. So, I mean, like, it was just an unusual game, because really, I thought, when it was 3-2, I really thought the Jets were actually going to win that game. I really didn't think that the Jets were going to lose. And then, you know, the late goal in the second changed my thinking. But had that game gone 3-2 into the third, I think the Jets probably end up winning. But, you know, again, it wasn't. It was 4-2. And then Detroit, with as desperate as they are for any sort of, you know, good news to happen during this, you know, 12 games in a row that they had lost. Mm-hmm. You know, they were 0-10-2.
Yeah.
So, and Paul Maurice talked about it. About their game, they watched the tape from the game, the Penguins, when the Wings played the Penguins, and how that was a tight game, and that the Detroit played better, and you could see them starting to change their game plan a little bit. And so, I mean, I'm not terribly surprised that they were able to hold on and maintain that win. And you know, is it disconcerting now that the Jets have lost to teams like LA twice, New Jersey once, and now the Wings once?
Jets are 2-3-1. So they have 2 wins and 6 contests against the 3 worst teams in the league. Right. The Red Wings, the Kings, and the Devils.
And it's something we talk about quite often, is the idea of putting points in your standings bank.
Mm-hmm.
But again, well, it's not, you can't win every single game. It's an unusual situation, right? Because the Jets have, you know, a lot more points right now in the standings bank, and you know, they're right in the thick of things in the Central. So obviously not ideal to have losses against those teams, but at the same time, the Jets are in a good position.
See, I don't think it's disconcerting. Obviously, you don't want to lose games to teams that you should beat, Drew. And I realize that, you know, a lot of the talk around town here is that the Jets lost that second game to Detroit. But yeah, I do think that Detroit was motivated, and they were probably felt embarrassed the way they played in Winnipeg on Tuesday night. They probably just were sick of losing, right? You said it, 0-10-2. Like, they hadn't won a game in a long time. They haven't won a lot of games in Detroit. So they were probably in that dressing room before the game saying, like, okay, guys, enough. Like, let's break this losing streak. Let's give our fans, you know, something to be happy about. And you know, when you look at where the Jets are in the standings, it's tight. Yeah, they're comfortably in third, but you've got Dallas right behind you.
Tied with the Jets right now.
Right?
Jets have a game in hand, but they are tied for the in third spot.
There you go. So, and you've got Nashville that's starting to pick it up. So the point is here, you know, the Jets have played really well, but if they win tomorrow against Philadelphia, we're probably not looking back at this loss and saying, oh, I can't believe the Jets didn't win that second game against the Red Wings in Detroit. I mean, if the Jets ended up losing, or pardon me, not making the playoffs and missing the playoffs by a couple of points, then you could say, well, they had an opportunity to beat teams like the Kings and the Devils and the Red Wings and teams like that. But I don't think that this is necessarily, you know, a sign that, you know, things are going to, you know, fall apart here for the Jets. I mean, it wasn't a very good game. Yes. On Tuesday night, in the first period, they came out a little flat. Drew, I agree with you on that. And this wasn't their best effort in Detroit. And they probably should have taken an advantage of a team that doesn't have Mantha, doesn't have Athanasia. Like, these are, the Red Wings don't have that many top-end players. They definitely don't have any superstars. Dylan Larkin is the closest thing they have to a superstar right now. But when you're talking about Larkin, Mantha, Athanasia, I mean, these are the top players. Yeah, Robbie Fabry is a former first-round pick. He's a good player. But, I mean, nobody's going to call Robbie Fabry a superstar.
No,
he's a really good offensive player. So the fact that the Jets couldn't beat a team that's already thin.
Let's talk about the power play. It's 1-for-6 in the 2 games against the Red Wings. The Red Wings having the worst penalty kill in the entire NHL. And they only had the one opportunity on Thursday night. And it came late in the third period. And it was a bit of a feeble attempt by the Jets to just establish the zone against the Red Wings was a struggle. And had they been able to capitalize on that power play opportunity in the third period, all of a sudden it's a 4-3 hockey game, and the pressure is squarely on the Red Wings, because they don't know how to win, the Red Wings. They don't have the confidence that they're going to be able to shut down a team and come away with a win. But the Jets' power play isn't able to do anything. And I know we've talked ad nauseum about the power play, and I know people are probably sick of the conversations about the power play, but they continue because the power play has been just that bad. What's it going to take? And the Jets will be on the practice ice in about just under 2 hours' time. What's it going to take for the Jets to finally start to try something different on their power play?
That silence, that dead air you hear is I mean, I have no idea. It doesn't seem that they're changing anything significantly anytime soon. So, I mean, to your point, Drew, we'll have to wait and see when they're willing to do it. But, I mean, you're currently sitting, what, like 26 overall in the NHL, 15.5% on your power play. I mean, it's obviously it's not very good. You're in amongst teams like, ironically, Detroit actually has a better power play than the Jets. The Sharks have a better power play, you mm-hmm. know? So the only teams you're ahead of are the Senators, the Ducks, the Kings, the Devils, and the Predators. So, I mean, that's not good. When you have the weapons that the Jets have, and when you have a power play that's been in the past as lethal as the Jets has been, mm-hmm. there's no reason that there is a big reason. We know that, like, obviously, not having Dustin Byfuglien has had a major impact on this Jets power play.
No question, but you haven't
and
had
Jacob
Dustin.
And Jacob Trouba as well.
Yeah, okay, but you haven't had Dustin Byfuglien or Trouba for 30-some-odd games at this point in time, and they're not coming through the door anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure
actually, that's
out.
That's not true. Jacob Trouba will be in about 2 months when the Rangers visit.
But he's not going to be playing on the Jets power play.
In fact, it'll be a Heritage
Classic
game.
You know what the reality is? I've really liked Neil Pionk on the power play. Like, to me, Neil Pionk, he doesn't necessarily have the shot that Dustin, how many guys actually have the shot like Dustin Byfuglien? I mean,
right, but there's other, very few, but other power plays still succeed without having an absolute mammoth cannon from the top of the point.
So what's your theory then? Because you seem to obviously have some position.
Well, I think you need to try something different, first of all.
Okay, thanks, genius. That's quite evident by the fact that they're 26.
Right. I've made it perfectly clear what I think the problem is, that you can't run the power play right now through Blake Wheeler anymore. For whatever reason, he's struggling. You saw it that they, you know, that when the Jets were able to gain the zone against the Red Wings on Thursday night in that one power play opportunity, immediately the game plan called for them to attack Wheeler and to not give him any time and any space. And his reaction time and his ability to deal with the advanced pressure resulted in a turnover.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't think it's just Blake Wheeler. Like, you make a good point when you talk about zone entries. Zone entries are key on the power play. You have to be able to establish the zone.
Right, and they would dump it into the corner, and immediately the Red Wings knew exactly what was happening, and it was out before the Jets could even begin a forecheck and use the man advantage to try and gain puck possession.
Right, so when you're talking about Blake Wheeler and how successful he was the last couple of years, I mean, there were few players, and I'm talking about few players in the entire league that were as successful as Blake Wheeler setting up plays. Like Patrick Laine, how many goals did he score last year on the power play? Something like 20, right? Mm-hmm. So, yes, the power play is a concern, Drew, but you know, they scored a goal on Tuesday on the power play against Detroit. The game previous against Anaheim, they scored a power play goal. So it's not like, you know, the Jets haven't scored a power play goal in 3 weeks. I mean, they've scored a couple power play goals.
Two for their last 10 over the past week. They scored
which,
one.
By the way, is an improvement on their...
which is 20% is actually an improvement. Right. But you look at how it was against the Red Wings, and it just... Yeah, they scored, but they scored that power play goal when it was 4-1 at that point in time. It was Scheifele's goal 4 seconds into the power play in the third period on Tuesday night. And yeah, it counts, but I mean, when push comes to shove, when you need a goal and you have a power play opportunity, the Jets power play has not been able to get it done at all this season.
Yeah, and it's not something new. It's struggled all year long. And when you talk about the Philadelphia Flyers, the Jets, by the way, this hasn't been talked about a lot. The Jets don't take a lot of penalties. The Flyers don't take a lot of penalties, if you look at the Flyers. So it's not like, you know, the Broad Street Bullies these days. It's not like the Flyers of 5 or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you can't count on getting necessarily 4 or 5 power play opportunities like you did Tuesday night. I think they had 5, right?
Something like that. They were 1 for 6. So they had 5 power play opportunities. Yeah. No, 1 for 6 in the 2 games against the Red Wings. So they had 5 opportunities on Tuesday night and one on Thursday night.
So Philly's not going to give you a lot. They just don't take a lot of penalties. So, yeah, look, it's a problem, Drew, and we talked about it last Saturday when we were at CF Polo Park. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. Like, I really like, I've said this many times before, I really like Nick Ehlers on the first power play unit. I prefer Morrissey on the first power play unit, but I have no problem with Pionk. Like, I think Pionk is a really skilled defenseman. We've talked a lot about him this year. Everybody is raving about Pionk these days, and he deserves it. I mean, he's playing, you know, 22, 23, 25 minutes a night. But the point is, when you get into these types of one-goal games and the power play has been struggling, It can kill you when you can't muster up a power play goal. So I think against a team like Philadelphia, you'd probably like to see 1 or 2 power play goals, and you'd like to see them continue this because, you know, this 3-game homestand, it's not the hardest homestand, but Carolina is a very good offensive team. They're a good defensive team as well. So I think on this homestand, you definitely want to get the power play going. I mean, it doesn't mean you necessarily have to score four or five goals, but you definitely want to see improvements. And you got to believe that today at practice, the Jets are going to continue to work on the power play.
If the power play, if they work on the power play today in practice, and if the alignment isn't different than how it's been the last number of weeks, I will be surprised, because it's clear to anybody who watches that this power play is not in sync and something needs to give. And when you have the offensive firepower like a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers, who isn't getting big power play minutes, it's time to switch something up to get him to just try something different to see if a new alignment, a new personnel.
You got to get Patrick Laine the puck. Like, I realize, guys, that Patrick Laine has changed his game.
But not on the power play.
But you still got to be using that shot more. I don't care what anybody says. I want to see Patrick Laine in his wheelhouse getting opportunities, shooting that puck on the power play.
I agree wholeheartedly. It's crazy that they haven't been able to, because it's so repetitive and it's the same thing game after game, and every other team knows how to game plan for it, and Jets need to change something around.
And for the record, even when the teams knew that Patrick Laine was getting the puck, he still scored.
That's right.
So, yeah, no, I mean, you guys are right. In that regard, there's no question that Patrick Laine has to be the guy who's firing that puck. And I mean, I think, to your point, Drew, that there's going to be a lot of success. You know, or to Ezzie's point, sorry, is getting Nikolaj Ehlers into that unit, and really, because he's the guy who creates the possession, allows you to establish your position and really get things going, and he generates. So I think if you're going to look for one change, you got to get Nikolaj Ehlers on the top unit.
When we come back, we discuss Jack Roslovic, his performance thus far as a top six forward for the Winnipeg Jets, and what it could potentially mean for his next contract. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
By Vasilevsky. Beaulieu for Wheeler. Into the slot. Quick shot by Kopp. Rebound. Vasilevsky save on the short side. Center score! Jack Roslovic. Vasilevsky thought he had it. And Andrew Kopp gets it to the front of the net. And Jack Roslovic has the Jets in front 2-1.
Jack Roslovic scoring for the Winnipeg Jets. That was back last month against the Tampa Bay Lightning, that victory where the Jets went on, started really off that good road trip that's begin to carry over into the good play that the team has had as of late, notwithstanding Thursday's loss, of course, to the Detroit Red Wings. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. This segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. Jack Roslovic, gentlemen, we know that last year he was not happy with his usage by the Winnipeg Jets, and you know, allegedly there was a bit of a trade request towards the end of the year, which to no one's surprise the Jets did not fulfill, because I didn't see any possibility of that happening. That's not the Jets' MO. He's now playing in that top six role for the Winnipeg Jets. He's been there for a lot of the year. We know he started playing with, you know, Kopp and Lowry to sort of begin the year, but now he's been more into a top six role.
He was with Kopp and Lowry last game.
That's right. Well, yeah, they flip-flopped it when they were looking to get a bit of a boost. But for the most part, he's been playing on a line with Nikolaj Ehlers and Blake Wheeler. Yep. So my question for you guys, Jack Roslovic, 6 goals, 6 assists, 12 points so far this season.
Yep.
Is he doing enough with the top six opportunity that he has currently with the Jets?
Yeah, it's a good question. And this is a big year for Roslovic, right? I mean, last year of his entry-level deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's really a guy that I would say is in line for a long-term contract like a Kyle Connor. Like, no. I don't think a 6 or 7 year contract is coming up. I would expect it to be a bridge deal.
I would agree.
And I think we're going to get into that in a little bit here, but you know, I look at Roslovic and I've definitely seen improvements in his game. I mean, we all know that he's got the speed and the skill,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, we knew that after he was drafted, right? When he was taken late in that first round, we knew that the Jets had a really good player, and you know, he took a little bit longer to develop than Kyle Connor, but obviously Dave put up really good numbers with the Moose mm-hmm. in the A, right? But I would say that this year he has taken advantage, but I've also seen some dips in his game, and you're seeing that right now. He has no points in his last 5 games, And he's obviously a guy that wants to see his name on the score sheet. I mean, this is a guy that's more of an offensive minded player. And Dave has said this many times before, and that's why Dave is the Moose insider. I mean, Roslovic is more of a playmaker. Mm-hmm. He's not a shooter. Like when you talk about a Patrick Laine or, you know, even a Mark Scheifele or Nikolai Ehlers, I mean, Roslovic isn't what you would call a pure shooter. So he's a guy that can obviously, you know, handle himself around the net. He can score goals, but I think when you look at that line with Blake Wheelers and Nikolai Ehlers, Wheeler's not a natural shooter either, right? So I don't necessarily know that long term that is the best line. Matty Perreault's up on that line now. We'll wait to see, you know, a couple of hours from now, Drew, we'll see, you know, if Jack Roslovic is either on the third line or the second line. But regardless, I think we agree that he should be in the top six, regardless of Brian Little's in the lineup. I mean, Roslovic has that skill, but I think at times this season, and you know, we're 31, 32 games into the season, I think at times you've seen Roslovic disappear a little bit. I do think that Roslovic has improved the defensive side of his game exponentially. I really do. I think that was a weakness in his game. I do think that he's doing better with the back checking, the back pressure, and all of that. I mean, he is a really talented player. So, you know, he's on pace for 30 to 35 points this year. I probably thought he would be closer to around 50 points.
He's on pace for career highs. His previous career high, of course, was last year when he had 24 points in 77 games.
Right.
He's on pace for, like you said, as in and around 30 points right now.
And it's not just about points, but the reality is when you're playing a top six role on a top team like the Jets, not necessarily the best team, but a team that we all expect to be a playoff team when all is said and done in April, I mean, you expect more results. You don't expect your, you know, first or second line guys to go five games without a point. So he's only 22 years old too, though. I mean, that's something that you have to factor in. I mean, he has been given this opportunity by Paul Maurice and the coaching staff. And again, I don't want you know, people to think that I'm saying Roslovic is a bad player or he's not having a good year. But, you know, 12 points, I mean, that's not something that I would get too excited about.
This is his second, he's in the midst of his second five-game drought without a point. He also went pointless in five straight games, October 15th through 26th. Now, back in October, he was probably playing in more of a different role at that point. He wasn't necessarily in the top six role that we've seen because we still saw Scheifele and Wheeler together at that point in time. And then since that they split those guys up and Wheeler moved to center, that's when Roslovic has gotten the greater opportunity, Dave. But, you know, right now it just seems, again, if you're playing in a top six role going five straight games without a point, and it's not that he hasn't been noticeable, but it seems like the team needs a little bit more from him than they've been getting over the last, you know, handful of games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's an unfair assertion. I think that you've got an opportunity. I mean, and that was what, you know, Jack Roslovic was basically asking for last year, was an opportunity. So, I mean, if you want, I mean, that's the funny part about sports is that we, you know, you can't fault a guy for wanting more. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about a guy wanting the puck on a stick or wanting to be the guy. So if you want to be given a bigger role, well, you have to seize the opportunity. And, you know, when you're playing on a line with Blake Wheeler and Nikolai Ehlers, that's a real opportunity there. And that's an opportunity to produce. And you know, we know, obviously, he's not a guy who's going to get power play minutes the way those guys do, or Blake Wheeler does specifically. But mm-hmm.
He's on the second power play unit with Ehlers.
With Ehlers, but you're not getting the first power. I mean, generally the first power play unit is sucking up most of that time anyway.
Getting 90 of the 120 seconds, right. It seems like, for the most part.
Right. So you're not really getting a lot of points in that regard. But look, I agree with Ezzy. I think Roslovic does a lot of good things. He's a very defensively minded forward. I mean, obviously played center quite a bit with the Manitoba Moose until we saw with the Moose that they moved him from the center position to wing because that was obviously where the Jets said, we're going to have him start his NHL career. Mm-hmm. So that's when he made that move. But he still, you know, again, when you have that center mentality and, you know, a defensive mentality like Roslovic did, you know, that's what you do. You have that kind of that vision. So is he going to be, you know, shooting percentage is right now the lowest of his 3 years in the NHL at 10.5%. But again, he is a passer. And you know, when you have a guy like Ehlers on your line, like, you know, he can be a shooter. And you know, it's interesting because you really want to see a guy like Roslovic stepping up and we see him using his wheels. We see him using his vision, but it's like putting it all together. And again, yeah, you know, look, is a five-game slide when the Jets are still like, look, that was their first regulation loss on Thursday in December. Since November 1st, this team has been pretty much you know, rolling.
One of the top teams in the league.
So you can afford to not have that. But at the same point, you know, you're not always going to have, I mean, the one thing about this Jets team is you are blessed with a lot of balance in the sense that you've got Laine, you've got Shifley, you've got a lot of other guys, Ehlers, Kyle Connor, Blake Wheeler. You know, you've got a lot of guys who could pick up the scoring, but when you're given that role, you know, in that top six, you're expected to produce, and that's kind of the bottom line.
I also think, Dave and Drew, when Roslovic is out there on the power play, and whether or not he's actually producing on the power play, but when he's getting some looks and he's getting involved in the play and he's creating, I think that gives him a lot of confidence. And I think he is a guy that has struggled a little bit with his confidence. I don't know him personally. I'm not getting this from anybody on the Jets team, but I think you've seen, you know, at times you've seen a less confident player, and at times you've seen a more confident player. And I think that's why at times you kind of see these lulls. And again, it's not just about points. It's not about goals and assists, but he is a player that is more of an offensive minded player. I mean, he's not playing a defensive role on the third line. I mean,
he's playing a top six role because the Jets expect him to produce offensively.
Well, right. And you know, top six, I think, you know, top nine is the new top six. But the point is, when
you're not on the Jets, it isn't.
Well, no, but when you're, well, that's right. I mean, the Jets aren't getting a lot of offense from the third line this year, but I mean, Lowry did score on Tuesday, but the point is, I think he is a guy that thrives, and once he starts to, you know, put up a few points, then he works off of that. So, you know, he might not have as many goals or assists as he would like, but I think overall his game is getting better, and you know, he's not getting pushed off the puck as much. You see him defensively responsible in his own zone. So, you know, we'll see if he's back up with Wheeler and Ehlers, but I do think, you know, that's interesting to see, you know, how he does in the kind of second half of the season or slash the last 50 games of the season, because you know that with, you know, his contract expiring, he is a guy that, you know, is due for a significant raise.
Well, you mentioned his contract, and he is RFA at season's end, the RFA without arbitration eligibility.
Yep.
But this is a guy, to your point, you said it off the start, he's probably looking at a bridge deal, you know, in and around a couple $1 million a year.
Yeah,
if this is a guy who's going to get, if he tops out at 30 points this year, which is, you know, in and around where he's on pace for, you're talking about a guy who's likely to get, you know, a 2, maybe a 3 year deal, you know, $2-2.5 million dollars a season.
Yeah, that's exactly. Anthony Beauvillier is a good comparable. He was taken a few spots after him late in the first round of that 2015 draft that Dave and I were at in Florida. No big deal. He's probably going to be somewhere around 2-2.5. I imagine Roslovic will probably be, you know, closer to 2.5. That'll depend again, Drew, whether it's a 2 or 3 year deal, but yeah, that's kind of what we're looking at. So, you know that he, you know, wants those offensive numbers to be a little bit higher than maybe what he's on pace for right now. But, you know, he's a good player. He's having a decent season.
You mentioned Beauvillier. He was an RFA at the previous season's end. He signed a 2-year, $2.1 million contract, 2.1 per season. So 2 years, $4.2 million. That's in and around where Roslovic should be. Beauvillier was coming off a season with 18 goals and 10 assists. So in and around, again, that 30-point mark. In any event, it'll be interesting to watch Jack Roslovic. You know he wants to get off the schneid. The 5-game point streak, I'm sure, is something that's bothering him. They'll have an opportunity tomorrow afternoon as the Jets and the Flyers will do battle at Bell MTS Place, the start of that 3-game homestand, which will also see the Hurricanes and the Blackhawks come to town. When we come back, Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is going to join us for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290, trying to get a hold of Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. Hopefully he'll join us in a couple of moments. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. The Jets and the Flyers tomorrow afternoon at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear, of course, live on TSN Radio 1290, puck drop 4 p.m. The Flyers are coming in, I believe, having played this evening in Minnesota.
Yep.
So it'll be a third game in 4 nights for the Flyers. They play 6 p.m. tonight in Minnesota, so it's the second half of a back-to-back between the Jets and the Flyers tomorrow night. So the Jets rested, having not played since Thursday, will hopefully be able to jump on, or will be able, should be able to jump on a Philadelphia Flyers team that has played a lot of hockey over the last few days.
Yeah, but I mean, I went back and looked at the Flyers. The Flyers won their last two back-to-back games. So yeah, I mean, no, and the Flyers are playing really good hockey. So I realize that, you know, people are looking at that and they're saying, well, the Flyers are playing in Minnesota. Not a lot of travel time, obviously. Yeah. So I mean,
they'll be here by 11 o'clock, right. No, maybe 12.
Right, and you know, the Jets have only played 4 back-to-backs, and they've been very good as well. So you know, the Flyers, I think I calculated they're 4-4-2. They've got points in 6 of their last 8 games that have been in back-to-back. So mm-hmm. I don't know how big of an advantage. That's all I'm saying. I mean,
no question.
Don't get me wrong. The Jets can end up winning this game 5-2, and Philly could win the game tonight against Minnesota. I'm just saying, I think it's a small advantage to play a team. If anything, you know, it might be an advantage for the Flyers because the Jets have been off for 2 days since their last game, right? And they didn't practice yesterday. So, you know, the Flyers, obviously, without Travis Konecny, he's been a big story. I think Konecny, guys, by the way, you know, we're going to talk to Anthony Sanfilippo later, but Konecny is a guy that I think this year is finally starting to get a lot of respect. Last year, you know, he's got actually back-to-back 20-goal season. So he's been a good player for the Flyers for several years now. But I think this year, because he's leading the Flyers in points, people are starting to kind of finally realize how good this guy really is. But, you know, the Flyers, you know, it's amazing what a good coach and good goaltending does for you, right? I think Alain Vigneault's done a really nice job there because the Flyers didn't exactly, you know, start off the season like gangbusters, and now they find themselves in a wild card spot, Dave, you know, battling with the likes of the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, you know, even though, you know, it's a second game of a back-to-back, the Flyers are a scrappy team.
They certainly are, and this is a team that's been without Nolan Patrick all season long. Nolan Patrick has a migraine condition or a migraine issue that he hasn't been able to you know, heal from, or he hasn't been able to find the solution to, which is obviously terrible for a guy who was the former second overall pick.
It's horrible that he's been out, and especially with the way the Flyers are playing, they're finding themselves, you know, in the middle of the playoff race, currently in a playoff spot. So obviously we hope Nolan Patrick comes back sooner rather than later, because, you know, that's a very scary medical issue.
We also want to send our best to Flyers winger Oscar Lindblom, who was diagnosed yesterday with bone cancer. He's obviously going to be out of the Flyers lineup.
That's horrible.
Going forward this season as he undergoes treatment, but we do want to send our best to him. He's leading the Flyers in goals, but obviously
well
that's a secondary issue to his health going forward. So all our best to him.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be here, guys. All the best for the season to you all.
Likewise, Ted. You know, we spent a lot of the show so far sort of talking about the Jets' play over this past week. You know, the two games against the Red Wings. They had the win last Sunday against the Anaheim Ducks. You know, these games that they've lost, though, to the bottom teams in the league, you know, they're only 2 wins out of 6 against the Red Wings, the Devils, and the Kings. You wrote about this in the Winnipeg Sun. Do you think that this is going to end up, you know, biting the Jets in the behind later on in the year when you're into game 80, 81, 82, and every point matters?
Well, let's say it certainly could, right? I mean, there's no knowing for sure what their situation will be, if they'll be in a, you know, in a tight playoff race or, you know, for a certain playoff position. And obviously, these are the kind of games that you just shouldn't be losing. I think the Detroit Red Wings played really well on Thursday night. I don't think there's much question that they outplayed the Jets and got, obviously, some great bounces that helped. If you take away those bounces, I don't think the Jets were horrible. They just, it really was a game that they got beaten. And maybe it doesn't matter that it's the worst team in the league. That team played well on that night. But it does matter that they've lost these, you know, however many, I guess, three games in regulation and one game in a shootout to these teams that are right at the bottom of the standings. It definitely is going to hurt them, I think, down the road. Obviously, you make up for that when you play your games within the division. You win all your games against St. Louis. You win your games against Colorado and against Dallas. You're going to be all right regardless. But it's not like you ever want to give away points when you really should be getting them.
Ted, last segment we were talking about Jack Roslovic and, you know, the fact that he's in the last year of his contract. He's struggling offensively, no points in his last 5 games. Paul Maurice took him off that second line, and against the Detroit Red Wings on Thursday night, he was on the third line. But not specifically about Roslovic here, a question more so about secondary scoring. Up until this point in the season, you know, the Jets are relying heavily on 5 forwards. Of course, Scheifele, Lyonnais, Connor, Ehlers, and Wheeler. After that, there's a big drop-off. Andrew Kopp is 10 points back of Blake Wheeler. Up until this point, you know, it's been okay for the Jets because they have so many talented players in their top six. But is this going to be a problem as you kind of get into, you know, games 45, 50, 55 in the season? You're going to need guys like Andrew Kopp, Adam Lowry, Jack Roslovic to start producing.
Yeah, and not to mention maybe the occasional goal from the fourth line, right? Like, that's something that just hasn't been part of this team's makeup this year. And you would have to say that's something that I think needs to be rectified. They do need more from the bottom six. Adam Lowry has obviously chipped in a few goals. Andrew Kopp chips in a few goals. And I think Matthew Perreault, certainly when he moves up and plays in a more offensive role, fits pretty well with those offensive players. Roslovic, obviously, again, like you said, has had stretches like this throughout his short career in the NHL where you don't really see much from him, not generating a whole ton. And then that sort of earns him a spot on that checking line, which really, you know, it's not a particularly offensive line. Great offensive zone time. There's no doubt about that. They do a fantastic job of keeping the pressure on and staying in that offensive zone. But that doesn't always lead to scoring chances. It certainly helps because the other team isn't in their zone, in Winnipeg's zone. But, yeah, I mean, you'd like to see a little bit more from that. I think that this team is relying probably too much on those top guys. But you have to admit, they're pretty good top guys. That's one thing that you have to remember, that you're going to get a lot of your scoring from those guys because that's what they do.
Well, Ted, in 32 games, Neil Pionk has been turning heads. What have you thought of his play for the Jets' first-year defenseman?
Outstanding. I really think he's been a revelation. I paid a lot of attention to what people were saying when the Jets acquired him in June. And really, the questions that you got from people were, who is this guy and why would the Jets want him, given what his numbers look like with the New York Rangers? And, I called some media guys in New York and talked about him a bit, and they were not impressed with him. They, you know, generally didn't think very highly of what Neil Pionk brought to the NHL. And I think, obviously, the Jets thought differently. They really believed that he was a guy that could fit with them quite well because of his puck-moving ability, because of his offensive ability, and his, you know, responsibility in the defensive zone. And really, that's exactly what you've seen from him. He's been much better hockey player than I think anybody, at least in the fan realm and observers like you guys and myself, knew about him. I think maybe the NHL people, the scouts and whatnot, obviously knew more, and they made a really good move by bringing him here to replace Jacob Trouba, also getting Ville Heinola in that deal, because that's kind of the way the NHL is right now. It doesn't matter if you're a little bit smaller. If you can move the puck and you can play responsibly and have a good stick, you can be excellent in this league. I think it's so impressive that he's been quite possibly the Jets' best defenseman. I think Josh Morrissey obviously is extremely good as well. And I think they're kind of similar. Paul Maurice compared the two, said that they play a very similar kind of game. And really that's a pretty nice comparison for Pionk, because here's a guy that wasn't even drafted. And he said when he was in his draft year, he said, if I was a scout, I wouldn't have drafted me either. He just wasn't ready. So, you know, it's really quite impressive that a guy that couldn't even get a sniff when he was a younger player around his draft year is performing so well in the NHL right now.
Ted Wyman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. Teddy, as we sit here, you know, 30-some-odd games through the season, the Winnipeg Jets power play continues to not perform at the level that we've expected over the last number of seasons. Is there any reason, after this many games, to think that the Jets power play is going to find its previous success?
Man, I said to someone the other day when the Jets had before the Detroit game in Detroit, I looked at it and I said, boy, this team is 19-10-2, and they have one of the worst power plays and one of the worst penalty kills in the entire National Hockey League. Could you imagine where they'd be if they actually had a power play that could click consistently?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really, and you'd think it should be good. You look at what they've got out there, it absolutely should be good. What's missing from it from years past, I guess Dustin Byfuglien, but you know, I don't know that the point man has been anything to do with the problem. It seems like teams just kind of have them figured out from what they've done in the past. They love to get the puck to Wheeler down low. They like Wheeler to find either Laine on the whole seam pass to the opposite faceoff dot or to Scheifele in the middle, and they're taking those lanes away, and the Jets haven't been able to figure out ways to generate the really good scoring chances otherwise. That's on the Jets. It's on their coaching staff to try to come up with something that's going to work. And, you know, I mean, I guess it's a work in progress. Again, though, they could start pumping a few power play goals in, a couple a game, one a game, and what a difference it could make for this hockey team. It's a good hockey team that's competitive and wins a lot of one-goal games. Power play goals could make a huge difference.
Ted, you mentioned the fourth line earlier. Sorry, I'm stuck on those third and fourth lines. Mason Appleton picked up his first assist in his return to the booth. I mean, how soon before the Jets recall Mason Appleton? Because it could it be as early as, you know, Sunday or Monday?
I can't predict the future on that one, guys. I'm not sure. You know, I think Mason Appleton made this hockey team and should be still having a chance to perform for them. But, you know, I don't know how massive a difference he's going to make. That fourth line makeup just hasn't been all that great to this point. But, you know, I can't see why Appleton wouldn't get a chance to go in there, probably in place of Logan Shaw. They seem to like what Nick Schorr has brought at center. You know, I haven't seen a ton from them. I mean, they're down in Detroit the other day. What do you get, 4 or 5 minutes out of the fourth line? Not much. Gabriel Bourque, obviously, is a guy that they like for his energy and his physical play and tenacity. So, you know, they need to find a makeup that's going to give them a fourth line that actually has a chance to contribute, has a chance to play a few more minutes. You can't have your forwards playing too many minutes this early in the season if you want to have them around playing at a high level later in the season. So I think they really do need to find something that's going to allow them to play that fourth line a little bit more. And I think, yeah, Mason Appleton would be a nice addition. He deserves to get back here and give it a shot. I just couldn't possibly tell you how soon they plan to do that.
I'll tell you, yesterday the Jets were off, but they made some news when they announced that they were loaning David Gustafsson to the Team Sweden for the World Juniors. What were your observations? What did you think of the 2018 second rounder in the 22 games he played with Winnipeg?
Well, I don't think he was exceptionally noticeable most of the time. You know, he did have that one nice goal. I think the analytics people would tell you that that fourth line when Gustafsson was centering it was pretty poor in terms of its possession. The fact that they were giving up scoring chances quite regularly and generating very few, that's not what you want from your fourth line. Obviously, you want a fourth line that's at least going to hang on to the puck. If they're not scoring, that's okay, but just don't be letting the other team get too many chances to score. And so I don't think that Gustafsson was likely ready to be in the NHL at this point. And you know, I guess we'll probably see him somewhere else after the World Junior. A good move by the Jets to move him there and give him a chance to perform for his country and play at a high level there, and then we'll see what they do with him after. But yeah, I mean, the numbers just were not good for David Gustafsson. They were not good for that line when he was on it. So, you know, they went out and found somebody else to take that spot in Nick Schorr.
Ted Wyman covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. You can read all his work in that fine newspaper. Ted, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Have yourself a great rest of the weekend and happy holidays. All the best to you and your family.
Awesome, guys. Same to you. Always a pleasure to join you.
Thanks, Ted. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Manitoba Moose. We'll talk about the decision to send Mason Appleton down. We'll take a look at the TSN Radio scoreboard. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Harkins, nice job to hold himself up and get over the line, and now moves it. He takes the feed down low, moves it right back for Vesalainen on the half wall. Vesalainen leans into a shot, scores! What a shot by Christian Vesalainen as he just blew that one by Landon Beau.
Our buddy Daniel Fink with the call from last night's Moose game in Texas. Christian Vesalainen
Was a good shot, Dave? I know you watched the game.
It was a good shot.
Watched it through the closed circuit TV broadcast that they have in Texas.
It's so bad. You know, that's the beauty of AHL TV. Sometimes you can watch a feed and you're like, you feel like you're in the game.
Yeah.
And then other times, like Texas, is just awful.
Like you're watching.
Horrible to watch. They have two angles, bad and worse.
Well, there you go. But Vesalainen, you could see that Vesalainen's shot was a pretty good shot.
Yeah, no, it was a nice shot. I mean, it was a power play goal. The Moose, actually, kind of similar to the Jets, had two really unusual bounces to allow Texas to open the scoring and take a 2-0 lead, and then Vesalainen scored. Seth Griffiths scored one on the power play, and then to get him close, and then Vesalainen got him close again to make it 3-2 with a rocket of a shot on the power play.
It was all for naught, though. The 3-2 final, the Texas Stars winning both the games against
Texas
the Moose.
Has been unbelievable. Been really good.
Well, there you go. The Dallas Stars AHL affiliate, the Stars. So they won both the games Wednesday night and Friday night. The Moose back in action later tonight in San Antonio, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN Radio 1290. What do you guys think of the decision to send Mason Appleton to the Moose and Gabriel Bork to go right back into the Jets lineup on the fourth line? They both had missed a lot of time. Gabriel Bork last played on November 5th. Mason Appleton last played for the Jets on October 17th.
Yeah.
Why does Bork get to go right back into the lineup when Appleton has to go back to the Moose first?
Well, Maurice's rationale was that because Appleton was out longer, they wanted him to get in games in the AHL before calling him up. I mean, that's exactly what Maurice said. I mean, whether or not that's the real reason, I have no reason to believe that isn't the real reason, but I was a little bit surprised. I mean, the fourth line has not been playing that much all year long, right? And the fourth line has been continuously changing. You remember, you know, at the beginning of the season, it was Adam Lowry, Mark Letestu, and Gabriel Bork. Now the Jets have acquired Nick Shore, and it looks like, you know, a week or so from now going forward, the fourth line should be Nick Shore, Gabriel Bork, and Mason Appleton. So I do think Appleton is going to be back up with the Jets sooner rather than later. Whether that's, you know, 2 days from now, Dave, or 7 days from now, I have no idea. But, you know, I actually want to go back to Christian Vesalainen, because Vesalainen is a guy that I don't think gets talked about a lot. And when you talk about the Jets, and, you know, whether you want to call it the bottom six, the third and fourth line, whatever, the Jets have been kind of, you know, lacking production from those two lines. You know, you wonder if Christian Vesalainen is a guy that the Jets might call up. I mean, we know that he has an offensive touch, and yeah, he's not necessarily tearing the AHL up like Jansen Harkins is, Dave, but you know, that's another guy. I mean, you wonder if the Jets would call up a Harkins or a Vesalainen in addition to Appleton to kind of, you know, get that fourth line going, because even if the Jets have, you know, one of the best, you know, top sixes in the entire league, which I would argue they probably do with, you know, the likes of Wheeler, Shifley, Connor, Laine, and Ehlers. Once you get into the kind of, you know, nitty gritty of the season in the second half and into the playoffs, I mean, how many teams guys have won the Stanley Cup in the last 10 years, you know, with third and fourth lines that aren't producing?
Almost none. They need to find offense from the bottom six. And yeah, that was sort of one of the questions I had, you know, coming into the segment is, can you foresee a situation, Dave, where it's not Mason Appleton who's the next call up back from the Moose, but it's rather a guy like Jansen Harkins who continues to put up huge numbers at the AHL level? Could you see the Jets maybe rewarding him, albeit if it's only a short period of time, with an opportunity to get some NHL games in on the fourth line?
No, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised by anything at this point. I mean, again, to Ezzie's point, you need producers. So whether it's, you know, a guy who's been given an opportunity, or it's a guy who's going to get an opportunity like Jansen Harkins. My whole position with Jansen Harkins was the way Paul Maurice uses his fourth line traditionally, is it beneficial for him to be playing in, you know, 4 or 5 minutes a game versus what he's doing right now with the Manitoba Moose, which is being on the top line, being the center, being the guy on the power play, and getting those big minutes. Again, you know, he's really producing, and when people are asking me whether I thought Jansen Harkins should get a call up, there's no question he deserves a call up. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind he deserves one and will get one this season.
Based on performance.
Based on his performance and just based on what he's been able to do. Again, like, this is a kid I watch. He went to the ECHL because he had to get his game figured out. And he's really, like, again, since I've been talking about this for quite a while. Since last season, the second half of last season, you just noticed the upward trajectory in Jansen Harkins' game. So my only position was simply that you don't want to see a guy get called up and sit in the press box or get, you know, practicing with the team versus playing. I don't agree thinking that it's as beneficial. So I think you have Harkins, you give him that opportunity, but, you know, so the only position I had was I thought I want to see another month of consistency from Jansen Harkins. If you see another month of production like this, then yeah, I mean, for sure. But again, from the Jets' perspective, if you have an opportunity to give a guy like Harkins an opportunity on that fourth line, maybe he does start contributing. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. I would think that they'd send Luoto and Shaw down and call, if you want, Appleton and Harkins up. But I mean, you're not getting offense with Gabriel Bourque.
No.
You weren't getting it before. You're not getting it now. So why not give an opportunity to a young guy who's showing upswing and showing that he can score at the AHL level, see what he can do at the NHL level.
Before we head to break, a couple of quick notes I want to pass along in case you're just joining us. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers have made a signing earlier this morning. They keep that impressive offensive line intact. They add another key cog, Jamarcus Hardrick. He signs a one-year contract extension with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. You know that the Bombers signed Patrick Neufeld earlier this week. So Neufeld and Hardrick back in the fold for the Bombers as they look to keep that offensive line intact. And again, we mentioned how cold it is outside off the top of the show. That means that the Coats for Kids program, it's a great program. I was heavily involved with it in my time at Perth's Dry Cleaners. They need your help. The waiting list is over 2,000 people. CTV and the United Way are looking for your help. Please, if you have a warm winter coat that you don't need anymore, please donate it at any Perth's location or any City of Winnipeg fire and paramedic hall. They're looking for all winter gear, snow pants, toques, scarves, mitts. We know how cold it is outside. Please, if you can do your part, please donate to Coats for Kids. It's a great cause, and the people of Winnipeg are desperately looking for some coats. Right now, the waiting list is growing, and it's certainly not getting any warmer. When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo is going to join us. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com, and there's only one phone call we make when we need to talk about the Flyers. Anthony, how you doing, buddy?
Doing fantastic, boys. Good to be back on the airwaves with you.
It's our pleasure, as always, Anthony. The Flyers in town for their only meeting against the Jets in Winnipeg, barring, of course, a Stanley Cup final appearance here. The Flyers, you know, right now they sit in a playoff spot. You know, they've had a pretty good season so far, I would think, with Alain Vigneault behind the bench. You know, what's the attitude in Philadelphia? Are people sort of surprised at the performance of the team thus far this year?
It's really kind of an interesting story here as far as fans are concerned, because I'll tell you, from a hockey perspective, it's a 180 from last year. And I credit it to two things. I credit it to the coach, Alain Vigneault. He's been fantastic with, you know, what he's brought to this team and held the players accountable. And I think that's really the thing that was missing last year. And then secondly, great goaltending, right? I mean, Carter Hart's been pretty good so far. Brian Elliott's been really good as a backup. So those two things combined are why the Flyers are playing better hockey than they did a year ago. But as far as the fans are concerned, I think it's still kind of a wait and see, show me that you could do this beyond just, you know, the first 2 months of the season kind of thing. Because I'll tell you, last week, or I guess it was a week and a half ago now, we had the Toronto Maple Leafs in for a game. And you would think Flyers, Leafs, it's a pretty good Eastern Conference rivalry, two decent teams, right, starting to both play better, Leafs after firing Babcock and bringing in Sheldon Keefe. It was the smallest crowd in the history of the Wells Fargo Center for a game not affected by weather. And that's, I mean, we're talking like significant. You know, Wells Fargo Center holds about roughly 20,000 for a hockey game, and the Flyers used to average that. For that Leafs game, it was only 15,000 people. And that's the announced crowd, which means that it was probably about 2,500 less than that, because people who bought tickets who didn't show up. So it was really kind of, I felt like I was in Florida watching the Panthers, okay? So I think there is still a, we're not quite certain that this is the right thing, that this is a good thing, that the Flyers are playing well right now. If they're still playing like this come February, March, I think that building will be full. But I think the fans are kind of just wait, you know, sit back and wait and see. kind of thing with this team right now.
Anthony, we got to talk to you about Travis Konecny. You know, he's out right now with the concussion. He suffered that injury about a week ago against the Ottawa Senators. He's not scheduled to play tonight against the Wild. He won't play against the Jets. Do we have any recent update? Do we know if there's any timeline here? And, you know, this is a guy who, you know, back in 2015 might have slipped to the Jets at 25th overall, but obviously the Flyers took him. The Jets took Jack Roslovic. The rest is history, as they say. But just how impressive has he been this year? Obviously leading the Flyers in points, almost a point per game player.
Yeah, Konecny's been great this year. I mean, you know, we've seen in the previous two seasons, or three seasons actually, that, you know, he's had flashes of this. Like, we knew that he would be a really good scorer. He reminds me a little bit now, when you watch him play, of Danny Briere with an edge. That's how I've been comparing him. Maybe a little bit of Marchand in there. Like, a little bit of Briere, a little bit of Marchand. That's kind of what Travis Konecny has been for the first 30 games of the season for the Flyers. Of course, he has a concussion, and Flyers have not updated it. So we don't know. We know he's missing the weekend. It didn't look like that bad of a hit. Who am I to, you know, I'm not a doctor, right? Who am I to suggest that he should be back sooner rather than later? But it didn't look like that bad of a hit. So I don't know if it's something where you're in a concussion protocol, you're usually in it for a week, they're giving him the extra day because it's a road trip. Why fly him just to Winnipeg for one game? I think that, you know, they next play on Tuesday at home against Anaheim. I would think that that's probably when they're kind of targeting him coming back, but I can't say that with any kind of certainty. But they miss him. I mean, it was evident in the game in Colorado on Wednesday night. I'm not sure if you guys got to see it. It was part of National Hockey Night. But the team was just, the Flyers were just missing something. And, you know, you're missing Konecny. They were missing Oscar Lindblom, who, that's such a sad story. He's going to miss the rest of the season. And then Phil Myers was also out for that game with back spasms. And you just could see, I mean, that's three good skaters against a fast Colorado team. And the Flyers just looked like they couldn't ever really catch up, other than for maybe, you know, 15 minutes in the second period where they looked really good. But other than that, they chased the game. And so when you're missing that kind of speed and that kind of talent, it's going to have an adverse effect on the team. And we'll see how they bounce back this weekend with back-to-backs in Minnesota and Winnipeg.
Anthony, back in June, the Jets dealt Kevin Hayes to the Flyers and gave him an opportunity to sign him before he became a UFA. The Flyers gave him a 7-year deal. How has he fit with Philadelphia so far?
Well, that's a great question, because I was one of those people, guys. And I know you guys got to experience Kevin Hayes a little bit. He's a good dude. I mean, really good guy. I always felt that he was watching him both when he was with the Rangers and then obviously with you guys for a little bit. That he was a little bit inconsistent. Like, he would be a guy who would play really well and score in bunches and then kind of disappear for a while. And when he first got here and I saw that contract, I was like, wow, they really, really overpaid him. Good for Kevin Hayes. I mean, I've never begrudge anybody to, you know, earn everything that they can at this level. But really, I felt the Flyers made a mistake. And to start the season, it was looking like a bad mistake, because he really struggled first month and a half. He admitted it. He said that, look, there was a lot of pressure on him with that contract. And then the story that came out with Frank Saravalli from TSN actually went on our podcast, believe it or not. That's where it broke. And said that he had talked to another NHL player where Hayes told him that, you know, he wasn't going to sign in Philly unless they overpaid him because he didn't want to come here. And so that was a big deal. And so the fans really were on him a little bit. But I'll tell you, in the past, I don't know, 10, 15 games, Kevin Hayes has been really, really good. He's scoring more goals. He's setting up. He's found a nice niche as a third-line center, playing with Scott Laughton on one side and the rookie Joel Farabee on the other. And it's been a really nice combination. He's a 200-foot player, so he's really reliable defensively. And I'll tell you, the Flyers' penalty kill was the worst in the NHL, one of the worst in the NHL a season ago. They now rank fourth in the league. It's not all been Kevin Hayes. I think Justin Braun, also coming in the offseason from San Jose, has really helped stabilize that PK, and Matt Niskanen from the Capitals. But Kevin Hayes has been a key factor up front on the penalty kill. He's really kind of turned that around. And that's one of the things that, you know, the Flyers are paying him for. So I think the jury's still out long term for $50 million over 7 years. But I think that he's finally gotten past the struggling point where he was really looking bad. And he's starting to play a much better brand of hockey.
Anthony Sanfilippo is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Anthony covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, former second overall pick Nolan Patrick hasn't played a game for the Flyers this season. Does not seem to be any sign that he's going to come back anytime soon. You know, what is the Flyers organization saying about Patrick and his migraine syndrome? And why is there any belief that this is something that he's going to be able to overcome anytime in the near future?
Yeah, this is a tough question, guys, because I'll tell you, he's been practicing recently. He's been out on the ice, which is more than he had been doing for a long time. So I'm starting to wonder if maybe finally he's getting close to getting an opportunity. Maybe they'll probably send him down for a conditioning assignment in the AHL with the Phantoms, and then we'll see. Maybe he gets an opportunity sometime in January, late January, to get a chance to play for the Flyers. They're not saying much more than what they've been saying all along, that it's a migraine condition. It's a migraine disorder. I don't know a lot about that. It's not something that's a common occurrence in professional athletes, not just in hockey, but in any sport. I also wonder a little bit. I mean, I always got the feeling, guys, that Nolan was not the most committed player. When he was playing at his top level, at his A game, he's obviously a really talented kid who could play at this level and be a really good player. But I'm not certain that he had that motivation to always bring that A level. And I think that that's been part of his struggles the first 2 years. And I'm wondering if that has any kind of impact on this. Like, is he really pushing through as hard as he can? Is it bothering him too much? I don't know. The Flyers are not making him available to talk to us. So it's not like we're sitting there saying, well, gee, you know, check in with Nolan and see how he's doing. It's just kind of been, you know, a quiet under the radar thing. However, I will say, with the news that broke yesterday about Oscar Lindblom having Ewing sarcoma, a form of bone cancer, and going to miss the remainder of the season, and it's a really, if you really look into it, this might be career threatening, sadly, and he was tied with Konechny for the team leading goals. It wouldn't surprise me if they try to expedite Nolan Patrick's return now, because you don't just replace a top six forward in your lineup with a depth guy that gets called up. I mean, you have a player like Nolan Patrick who can fit that bill. Maybe you try and push that along a little bit faster, a little bit quicker, and see if you can get him playing, because the Flyers are going to need somebody of that level in order to kind of replace what Lindblom was giving them through the first 30 games.
Do you get the sense, Anthony, that there's any frustration within the Flyers organization for how long Patrick's recovery has been?
That's a great question. Yeah, I do. I mean, no one's saying that publicly. No one's outwardly saying it. I know there was some frustration with Nolan last year within the organization about compete level, about desire. You kind of quietly hear those things, and you begin to wonder. And I sit there and say, well, you know, he's young. He's 20, 21 years old. He's still trying to find his way. You know, he's still a kid in my mind. We'll let him figure it out first, and once he does, then he'll be okay. But to see this carry on, like, over the summer and into training camp and into the season, and now we're, you know, almost at the halfway point of the season, and we're still, because of headaches, not being able to play. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know migraines are debilitating, guys. I know that they're tough, right? I'm not trying to diminish what a migraine is. But I got to think that there are days when you're not having them and you'll be able to play hockey. I think that there has to be a level of frustration with where this is at this point. And I wouldn't be surprised, though, if they try and say, okay, look, Nolan, it's time to give it a shot, kid. It's time. We've let this go on. Let's give it a roll and see what we can do. And if they come back, if you're still dealing with them, obviously you've come out of the lineup, but let's at least give it a shot. I mean, I don't think that you're putting yourself at risk to try and play hockey through a headache.
But it's not concussion related. I just want to make sure that we're differentiating, right?
Yes. Well, that's the thing. I mean, so, you know, if it were concussion related, and who knows, maybe it is and they're lying to us, which wouldn't be the first time the Flyers have lied about head injuries. I mean, I can take you back through a myriad of players. Chris Pronger was an eye injury until it wasn't. All the stuff we went through with Eric Lindros with concussions back in the day. I mean, you could go through many, many guys where they don't tell you the truth about concussions, and then it turns out that it's worse than it is. So if, in fact, this is concussion-related, then they're not doing the team is not doing Nolan Patrick any good by making it seem like it's headache-related, right? If it is a concussion, it's making Nolan Patrick look bad to say that it's, to continue to say that it's a migraine disorder. I think that they would be, you know, better suited to come out and say, you know what, it turns out this is a concussion. And that way, at least we sit there and say, okay, well, now we understand why. Because otherwise, it just doesn't all add up otherwise. It puts more of the onus on the player to say maybe there's something wrong with the player, as opposed to, oh, okay, now we understand why he can't play, because it's a legitimate head injury and you can't risk playing with a concussion.
Anthony, just switching to the goaltending, earlier you mentioned the last game against the Avalanche, Carter Hart was in net for the Philly Flyers. Do we know yet who's going to start tonight versus the Wild? Is it going to be Carter Hart, or is it going to be Brian Elliott? Because obviously, if Hart were to get the start tonight, then Jets fans are going to see Brian Elliott tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a great question. I have not seen anything yet. I would assume that it'll come out of the morning skate today. I mean, they haven't announced it. So much has been tied up with the Lindblom story the last 24 hours. No one's really thought about the order of the goalies going this weekend. I just have a feeling that Elliott's going to play tonight, and you guys are going to see Carter Hart tomorrow. I think Winnipeg poses a little bit more of a possession threat than the Wild do, and Hart has a tendency to keep the Flyers in games when they're struggling to possess the puck. I mean, you look at that Colorado first periods have been a real problem for the Flyers because they seem to get kind of caught chasing the game, and then they get better as the game goes on, but a lot of times the goalies are having to save them early, and Hart's done it multiple times against a lot of good teams. And I think that you'll probably just want to see that matchup with Winnipeg, because Winnipeg is a better puck possession team than the Wild is. So I think, if I'm guessing, educated guess, Elliott tonight, Carter Hart tomorrow against you guys.
You know, Anthony, 2.5 hours west of us in Brandon, the fine folks had an opportunity to watch Ivan Provorov play a couple seasons for the Wheat Kings. He appears to be having a bounce-back season for the Flyers, fifth in scoring, and he looks like he could reach his 2017-18 numbers. So what's been going right for the Russian defenseman?
Well, two things. One, he got a contract, right? I mean, that was the thing that I think really weighed on him a lot last year. I think he was really worried about what his contract was going to look like because he was a restricted free agent. And so I think that was part of it last year. So I think that, number one. And I think, number two, playing with a reliable partner on the other side in Matt Niskanen has really allowed Provorov to find his game again. Niskanen, I argue in a lot of ways, he's been the most important skater in my mind. Obviously Carter Hart's been great in goal, but I think that Niskanen has his addition to this lineup, to this locker room, bringing a calming veteran presence, a guy who's won a Stanley Cup, and being able to play all situations. He plays PK and power play, and then on the top pair, 5-on-5, has allowed Provorov to get back to just being Provorov and not have to worry about, you know, being the only defenseman who can really do anything on the blue line. And doing such, it has allowed him to find his game. He's getting shots to the net. He's already got as many goals as he had a year ago, really playing some great hockey, and I think he's trending back toward being one of those young defensemen who is going to be in the conversation probably in the next 5 years amongst the best defensemen in the sport, maybe even an Norris Trophy candidate. So, I mean, when you have the same number of goals through 30 games as you had the entire season the season before, I mean, he's trending toward a, you know, 18 to 20 goal season. That's really good, especially considering he's not considered an offensive defenseman, right? I mean, he's considered more of a two-way guy. But he's been excellent for the team, and I think that if he's only going to get better from here, and I attribute a lot of this to playing with a veteran like Niskanen.
Last question for you, Anthony. Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Alain Vigneault, it's obviously his first year behind the bench for the Flyers. We know how good of a head coach he's been throughout almost all of his other stops in the league. What has impressed you the most about what Vigneault has done so far with the Flyers?
The holding them accountable. I mean, he's taken guys out of the lineup and benched them. He's put big money players down on the fourth line. I mean, you look at it, James Van Riemsdyk's got a similar salary to Kevin Hayes, and he was, you know, not scoring the beginning of the year, and they put him on the fourth line and basically said, you're just not producing for us, man. You know, until you turn it around, that's it. You're playing fourth line minutes. Jake Voracek early in the season before he started, you know, turning his game around. when he said he got his swagger back. And I think that getting moved down to the third line, he even got pushed to the fourth line in one game. I think that kind of woke him up a little bit. They took Shane Gostisbehere out of the lineup entirely, healthy scratch for three consecutive games. Told him he had to be a better teammate and stop being a malcontent. I mean, that was really kind of the situation with Gostisbehere. I mean, obviously he wasn't playing well either, but, you know, he was also not a good teammate. And so he's got to, do a quick attitude check. And then they put him back in, and since they put him back in, he's played better. So I think that, it's not just young kids who have to learn and work and get their time in and maybe sit out a game or only play 7-8 minutes. If the veterans are being held accountable too. And so when you do that to the veteran players as well as the young players, I think it brings the team together better. I think that they buy into the system more. And I think that as soon as you start getting some positive results, as the Flyers had, I mean, they had the most points in the NHL in the month of November. When you start seeing that and maybe this is right. Maybe this is the way we're supposed to play. And then you hold each other accountable for what you do. I think that's the big difference. And that, I think that that's what Vigneault has brought to this organization that was clearly missing in the Dave Hakstol era. And I think that that's one of the reasons why it's turned around. Look, the Metropolitan Division is a really tough division. There's no guarantee that this Flyers team, as well as they're playing, is even still going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're holding onto a wild card spot right now, but there are four teams ahead of them who are really good teams, never mind Toronto and Tampa, who are really good teams who are behind them chasing in the wild card. So there's no guarantee. This conference is really good this year. But I think that the Flyers are at least going to be competitive, be in the mix, and have a real shot at getting a playoff spot. And if they do, they're not going to be a fun team to play against with the style that Vigneault has them playing. So it would be really interesting come the postseason.
Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com, one of our all-time top five, top two, top one guests. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us, buddy. We'll do it again real soon.
Anytime, guys. And you tell Carcillo he owes me a reach out to me.
Okay,
he's coming up for you guys. He's coming up at midnight, at noon, well, noon Eastern, 11 o'clock for you guys.
Yep.
He owes me a call or a tweet. Tell him to reach out to me.
We'll pass that message along. Thanks, Anthony. Anthony Sanfilippo of CrossingBroad.com. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Flyers. We'll touch on the Jets and the Hurricanes as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
My first impression, without having looked at the game, is I liked our lines tonight. Thought in the second and the third we defended real well. That was obviously part of the D's work, but also forwards helping out. But I really liked what we created offensively.
After six games so far this year against some of the dregs of the NHL and this past week against the Red Wings, it's finally time for the Jets to get some more entertaining competition. That starts tomorrow afternoon against the Philadelphia Flyers. Always a fun time when the Flyers come to town. It's not quite an original six team, but it does have that same sort of vibe in the arena.
Lots of fans.
Tons of Flyers fans, mm-hmm. Of course. The history between the Winnipeg and the Manitoba area and Bobby Clark and the Flin Flon Bombers, of course, and Reggie Leach. And
I like
the Flyers.
How you're getting that Flin Flon Bomber.
I do it for you.
Reference.
I just do it for
well,
you.
Well, more so for my dad.
Well, yeah, I know. But yeah. Yeah,
hopefully my dad's listening right now.
Hopefully, yeah.
He usually listens.
That's
so.
Good. That's nice that he supports us. But anyways, the Flyers are in town tomorrow afternoon, 4 p.m. puck drop, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN Radio 1290. And these two teams tend to usually play entertaining games. I mean,
9-8
games. I mean, it's still, it's been many years
nothing
now?
Will ever top that.
No, it's been, 8 years since then at this point in time? And it's still the best game of all time.
Yeah, that game was just insane.
That was insane.
Those were the good old days when Ilya Bryzgalov was
when the Jets
talking
were in the East,
about the universe.
They?
And
yeah, of course, the Jets were in the East. In the East, and that game was still otherworldly. You're going to be hard pressed to find a game that's ever going to match that one. But anyways, the Flyers in town tomorrow, then the Hurricanes on Tuesday, and then a little bit of a dip on Thursday against the Blackhawks. But Jonathan Toews and those boys coming to town. It's a Central Division matchup, so that'll be at least a little bit more interesting. The Jets schedule from here on out is getting more difficult. You have a Minnesota Wild a week from now, where the Wild are playing much better hockey. We know that how well they've been playing as of late. They've just been on fire.
Also, Devin Dubnyk's back.
Devin Dubnyk's back. It looks like, at least temporarily as his wife is going through some medical issues, and we wish her the best, of course. And then you have home and homes coming up at the end of the month. You got St. Louis, you got Colorado, you got some real good teams, and it starts tomorrow afternoon, a game I'm really looking forward to. Always fun to see the Flyers playing good hockey, now that they have goaltending, and it's been, it's amazing for the Flyers year in, year out. When they have goaltending, they're competitive. When they don't have goaltending, they're not competitive. Carter Hart's a damn good goalie.
Yeah, absolutely. And so is Brian Elliott. Brian Elliott's got a .915 save percentage, right?
In a backup goalie role, he's perfect for
that. And that's a perfect example of where a split works, right? Like in Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuck is clearly one of the best goalies. I would argue he's probably right now the best in the entire league. I mean, like Darcy Kemper is in there, Ben Bishop is in there, a few other goalies, but really Connor Hellebuck's kind of, in his own class when you kind of get into the advanced stats, goals again, goals saved above average and all that. Kemper's the only guy I think that's ahead of him, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Hellebuck's been incredible, but Carter Hart, Brian Elliott, they've split the games. Hart's played 20, Elliott's played 15. Mm-hmm. It looks like the Jets could see Carter Hart tomorrow, but absolutely, Drew, I mean, that's a huge factor in why the Flyers currently find themselves in that wild card spot, in addition to the fact that they're getting some really good production from a variety of sources. I mean, we talked about Ivan Provorov, had a bit of a down year last year, but this is a guy, top 10 pick, he's already got 7 goals, could end up with 20 goals this year, really good defenseman. But I think Alain Vigneault, to Anthony Sanfilippo's point, he's brought a lot of accountability there. But, this team has an identity now. The Flyers were really struggling without an identity. And, Nolan Patrick is a guy, obviously, who they hope comes back, within the next week or two. But it's been, a pretty scary situation. Oscar Lindblom, we talked about it, just horrible news. Travis Konecny out with a concussion. We hope that, it's not long term. But, this is a team right now that they want to stay in the playoff race. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, you've got a tough back-to-back against Minnesota and the Jets. And, the Flyers score a lot of goals, and they're a much better defensive team than I think people give them credit for. They're not a team that, necessarily you're going to say is a top offensive team, but really good penalty kill. Just overall a much better team than they've been the last couple of years.
Absolutely. It'll be an entertaining contest. You mentioned the injuries, the Flyers going through, certainly through some adversity without Konecny and without Lindblom in their lineup. So it'll be interesting to see on the second half of back-to-back if the Jets are able to take advantage of a bit of a weakened opponent. It all starts tomorrow, 4 o'clock puck drop. Coverage will begin here.
That's a weird start. We don't see a lot of those 4 o'clock games.
Well, it's the 22 hours between games. So that's the NHL rule, about, of course, back-to-backs. They can't start closer than 22 hours. The Flyers play 6 o'clock tonight in Minnesota. 22 hours later is 4 o'clock in Winnipeg. So
I love the time, by the way. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of, when you get into the 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock start, especially when it's during the week. So I don't mind the kind of late afternoon start. It's
so
a little
so you can get home and back into bed for a nice and early for yourself.
Yeah. I go to bed a lot earlier than I used to. I used to be like a midnight to bed guy. Yeah. Now I'm usually in bed by like 9.
Yeah, well, children will do that to you there, Gramps. When we come back, we discuss the future of Paul Maurice as the Winnipeg Jets head coach. Is he a candidate to be the first head coach of the Seattle expansion franchise? Somebody thinks so. We'll tell you about who that is next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.